This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Men Talk. You're on Plains FM. This is your fortnightly conversation on men and society. I'm Ian Ferguson.
I'm Donald Pettit.
And I'm Nolene Allen.
Nolene is a guest. And so, Nolene, why are you here?
Well, I was really lucky. I've been invited to come here and talk a little bit about my role as service manager at the Canterbury Men's Centre.
Beautiful. And maybe you can tell us a little about yourself, the little girl before you came along.
Oh, well, the little girl grew up on a farm in a place called Cass Bay in Littleton Harbour in the day when there were only five houses there. And it was very much a conventional New Zealand childhood. Went to school at Littleton West, had lots of wider family connections, and it was just an ordinary Kiwi childhood.
Cool. And locals will know that area quite well. It's quite a busy part of the country this time of year, isn't it, with people coming down to the beaches?
Oh, it is. We host triathlons and lots of city people come to the beaches, and there's paddle boarding and sailing, of course.
And you're close to the marae there as well?
Right next door to Rapaki, yes. So as a child, I spent a lot of my childhood days around at Rapaki with the good people there.
Yeah. You've only been at the Men's Centre for about a year or so, so there's a big gap between your childhood and becoming the service manager. So
perhaps there are a few journeys, yes. Yeah. So grew up, got married, had children. My husband and I owned a business in Littleton, which was also providoring, servicing Chatham Islands. And that was interesting. I had lots of, there are a lot of houses on the Chatham Islands that I've sent all the decor down for. Paint, wallpaper, carpets. They trusted me. And then I moved from there to work with a company called Reckitt & Coleman, grocery manufacturers. So many of you would be picking up their products in the as you go through the supermarket. And I worked for them for a number of years. And that ended when I had a rather magnificent road accident on the Tunnel Road motorway. That kind of put me out of action for a period, and I now sport a wonderful scar on my arm and am your bionic woman. I did lose the use of my arm for a couple of years, but got through that. And actually went off ACC to become the Mayor of Banks Peninsula.
Oh, wow.
Previously, I'd been doing local government work as a mayor and as a councillor and as a community board chair, but I became mayor in 92 and held that position until 2001 when Bob Parker took my place. So that was a pretty exciting time, and I learned a lot and did a lot of work in community there. From that role, I then picked up the management of an organisation called Work Peninsula, which I had set up, and also looked after the Littleton Harbour Basin Youth Council, managed the youth workers and ran those social programs. I left that to then pick up another contract with the Ministry of Social Development as a social entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. So that was fascinating and enormous fun.
What is a social entrepreneur?
Well, in this instance, it was my job to first do a study about the social need within the Littleton Harbour Basin and out to Little River. So there was quite a bit of research initially. And then out of that, we identified with the community what were projects that would actually make a difference in terms of filling the gap of that social need. And out of that, I set up a number of programs, Whakarapa Carving Centre being one of those, an after-school program being another one, the Littleton Community House being another one, an adult education program. So that was very rewarding, doing that work. I finished that and then worked helped with the first year of Whakarapa Carving Centre for 12 months. Then I became the manager of Birthright. Then I went to Graham Dingle Foundation, mm-hmm. and now I'm landed at the Canterbury Men's Centre, which is awesome.
She can't complain, I'm her boss.
We had a wee joke that we were going to spring a performance review on you.
Oh, now that would have been fascinating.
So how did you get... did you apply for the job at the Men's Centre? Did you say, this is the job for me, I want to do this, or what happened there?
I was at a point in my life where I was wanting a change, and I wanted to be able to use as many of my skills that I'd built over through all of those varying roles. And this opportunity came up. It actually came up before Christmas, I think, in 2018 was when I first saw it, and I applied for it. I actually rang Donald, had a chat, mm-hmm. talked to some other people about it. I thought, this could be a good fit for me. But I didn't think I'd get it being a woman. I thought, no, will a men's centre really want a woman to be the service manager? And fortunately for me, they did. Mm. Yes. So I got the job. And again, you know, it's with most jobs, you're never 100% sure what you've got until you've got into it.
And what have you gotten into?
What have I got into? Actually, something pretty awesome. It takes you the first 3 months to find your feet, and that's probably what I spent. Then I spent the next 3 months shifting.
We had to move house. Well, yes. We chose to find a new location.
And it was a wonderful opportunity to have a blank canvas for setting up the new environment.
I think it might be useful to people to understand what the Canterbury Men's Centre is. I've not done a breakdown, yes. but it's probably important for you to give that context for your work.
The Canterbury Men's Centre is an organisation, as the name would outline, that is focused on men's well-being. It's really the only centre like that I know of in the way we operate in the country. We have a range of services which focus on men's needs, and we have a very strong counselling service with focus on male issues. We have the Male Survivors of Sexual Abuse team that sit alongside that, and we also have the Kids Needs Dad service. So we're looking at how do we support fathers as parents. And so those are the particular functions we deliver. But sitting alongside that, we have strong relationships with other men's organisations who use our facilities, such as the group for men who are in recovery from sex addiction. We've got a men's line group that come in every second Tuesday night. We have a lot to do with the men's prostate cancer. We work closely with the team from the AIDS Foundation. So we work strongly with a range of Māori organisations. So we really are a strong network of male-focused services.
Thank you. Yeah. And your work inside there, can you say a little about it?
Yes. So my work as service manager is to really be the glue that holds everything together and makes the wheel spin hopefully smoothly most days. So initially I will work with, alongside our counsellor, our paid team and our contractor team, we have a range of students. So it's my job to kind of oversee the students and support them to do the work and get the learning that they're there for. We meet new clients for the first time with free initial appointments. So we sit with the men, we allow them to tell us their stories, what's brought them to see us, what's troubling them, help them work out their plan for going forward, whether it's services that we deliver on or services that we can refer them to. Unfortunately, on many occasions, at least once or twice a week, in those initial appointments, a man is able to tell us, fortunately, unfortunately, he's able to tell us that he's been sexually abused. And often these men are in their 40s before that story comes to light. So then we sit with them in that moment. If they're quite escalated, we need to make sure they're safe. We may bring somebody in from the male survivor team to support them. And then we support them to link into those services as quickly as we can. If it's a man who's needing care around his own other personal issues of depression, anxiety, marriage breakup, managing to see how does he get to see his children, family violence situations. And when I say family violence, one of the things that surprised me the most as I got into this role was how many men are the victims of family violence, both emotionally, psychologically, and physically. And I know for some of the listeners today, that can be very surprising, but it's very, very real. And I see men, I have men coming in, and we know the term, the battered wife syndrome term, and I kind of, but men have that. So I'm thinking we need to be talking about battered spouse syndrome, because I see men who are absolutely, their brains are completely fried. They don't know which way to turn. They're in a very distraught state. And they're just like these women. They keep returning to that toxic relationship because they don't know what else to do. And I guess helping those men has been so gratifying to see them come back to being them again. And sometimes it takes many, many months.
I was thinking who would be approaching, asking for that kind of help? And though you've described some of the situations, does that really capture the men? You know?
We get all ages. I've had younger men in early relationships where... And these are good men, you know, they are hardworking, good men, they've been good providers, they're going home, they're doing all the work, they're really trying to make the relationship work. And yet there's this stuff going down. And then I've seen right through to the most recent person was 80. Yeah. And experiencing this abuse. I had one man who'd lived with it for 25 years. And was now deciding this has to change. And this, he had been living with some extreme abuse. And his first day in, he left with an exit plan. And he was clear how he was going to do that. Mm. And in fact, he had been sent to us by his doctor. Mm. He'd confided in his doctor that morning. His doctor had sent him directly to us. We sat down, spent a couple of hours with him, helped him work out how he would do this. And his plan was to be on the road to family in another part of the South Island that evening. So it's every age group. Every age group I've seen.
Hmm.
Slightly different scenarios, but the bottom line facts are the same, that these men are being emotionally, psychologically, and physically abused in their marriages. Some so caught up in such extreme situations where the only money that they have access to is $10 a week that their spouse gives them. So there's financial mm. abuse is there as well.
Mm.
And they're totally stuck.
And this would be maybe 10 or 20% of the men coming through or coming in with the family violence situation currently. So the there's another 80% or 90% of guys are, you mentioned breakups going through. I think it's usually more of a rough time, isn't it? The guys,
yes.
It's just a point in their lives. Mm. Like I'm slipping into my mode, but I'm starting to get, I think for people to understand is when guys are going through a rough patch, and this is one or two times in every man's life, I think, or everybody's life probably goes through a rough patch and we're that place where they can go.
Yeah, sometimes there's a combination of factors that all come together at one time and the poor guy's in total overload.
Mm.
He's dropped out of energy, he's all of these things, whichever way he turns, something's going sour in his life and he just needs to be held till he can figure out how he's going to manage this and make good decisions, and because they're good men.
Mm.
They're good men and they've got good hearts, but they're stuck, and it takes a lot of courage for these men to walk through the door. I had one man say it took three appointments before he got in the door.
Oh.
So I'm particularly mindful that when those men do come through the door, excuse me, how we receive them, how we greet them, how we work with them, then we've got to be mindful that for men, this isn't easy to come and ask for help. We've got to normalise it for them and help them feel really safe and help them feel really heard and help them feel as though there's nothing wrong with them for coming and asking for help. Mm. So often they'll tell me, da-da-da-da-da, so I've come to you, and I'll just say, well, congratulations. Mm. It's just awesome that you're able to recognise that now's the time to come and get some help and that you're doing it. So we're giving that constant reinforcement that they're making good decisions by coming and asking for that support.
So you've talked a lot about the issues and the problems, and it's, so perhaps you could share some positive outcomes and what you've seen and that kind of thing.
We have lots of positive stories every day. It's when the counsellors come in and say, do you remember that XYZ client? And I say, oh, yes, he graduated today.
finished up, yeah.
Yes, mm. And that's meaning that he's finished and it's all good. Or they'll come in and tell me, do you remember so-and-so? He's got a job. Isn't that wonderful? He's finally got the confidence to go back to work. Or we hear so-and-so, that couple that came in, it's working well for them now. Every time we hear that somebody has been able to pick up their life and move forward and graduate from us in a really successful way, we know we've done our job well.
It must be a little bit frustrating because you don't see your successes very much, because once they've kind of pulled themselves together, you don't see them again.
No, and sometimes you do wonder. I mean, you meet these lovely men and you know they're walking quite a big journey, and then they go off, they're flying free as they need to be, and you wonder sometimes, I wonder how so-and-so is. I do hope it's going well for him. And you can send him a positive vibe and a positive thought, but there's always the next man.
Mm.
And we have to then focus on the next one and give him the support and hold him till he's able to fly free.
It sounds like that these men don't need a whole lot of support. It's just that they need a little bit of something to kind of put around themselves to get them lined up in the right direction. So it's rather than a big thing.
It depends on the man and it depends on the journey, and oftentimes it depends on what the man's childhood has been. Because some of the men that come through, their childhoods haven't been great. They haven't had perhaps the most desirable of parenting or family circumstances. So sometimes there's so much healing that has to happen because of the damage that happened in their childhood that's now impacting on the adult world.
Mm-hmm.
And those are often longer journeys. And for some of those men in their adult world, they've been guests of Her Majesty, shall we say. And so there's healing that needs to come from that process as well. So it just depends on the man, it depends on the journey, and it depends on how much they want to grow as well.
There's a lot of focus in the media over the last few years about suicide. Maybe you can say a little bit about what you think of that and men and what you're seeing at the centre.
In all of the initial interviews that I do, we always ask the question, do you think of suicide? And about 3/4 of our men have either thought about it in the past or are thinking about it now. And so I test around that question a little bit to see how present it is in their minds. And for most of those men, we go out with a bit of a plan, depending on the level of concern and immediacy, how detailed that plan is. And there are some people we send out with highly detailed plans and back support.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it is something that we work with on a daily basis, and it is very real. Because these men tend to internalise a lot. They see it's weak to ask for help. And so often, even those closest to them do not know that that's where their thought patterns are. Mm. You know, somebody said to me, from time to time I have the comment, I was disappointed I was still alive when I woke up this morning. Mm. Yeah. And those are very real comments.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So is that about connection or is it about pain or what do you think is going on there?
It's a combination. Some of them are feeling a lot of pain. Yeah. Some of them are just not feeling accepted in society. Some of them didn't do well at school, were bullied at school, didn't have a good first family. And so nowhere in their life has there been much that's positive. Mm. And perhaps the only thing that's been positive for them has been their relationship with their partner, and now she's left him for another man. And that's yet another rejection, and they feel their whole life has been nothing but rejection and not been good enough. Mm. And that combination of pain across a lifetime, it just gets too hard to bear.
Sounds like you're hearing some very compelling stories.
We do hear some very compelling stories, some very sad stories. But the privilege is being able to help those men get better and heal from that and grow from that, to gather the wisdom that those experiences given them so that they can make better choices.
Mm. Mm. Do you see a lot of depression, mental health?
Yes, again, depression and mental health are daily experiences for us. Increasingly, with the pressure on the mental health system, we're having caregivers bring people in. We get referrals from the crisis team. We get direct referrals from Hill Morton. We get direct referrals from doctors. Good doctors are saying to their patients, I'm not just going to give you pills. I want you to also understand why the depression. And so those good doctors I have so much respect for, because they know that if they want to get the patients off the pills in the long run, they need to come to understand what underpins that depression, what is it they need to heal from, and how do they need to grow so they can cope with the vicissitudes that have brought them to this point. Mm. Yeah.
I think it might be time for a music break. We've done some heavy lifting.
We have done some heavy lifting.
So we'll be back in a minute.
Mama said to me, oh, each night, go to sleep, my child, sleep tight and dream away the days, but don't forget to pray. Say one for the birds. Say one for the trees. Say one for your sister, your two brothers, and maybe me. And if you should arise with the sleepness in your eyes, say one for daddy. 'Cause daddy, my daddy, don't live here. Turn the light out, Mama, I'm tired. Take my hand, I'm falling, falling into the night's dark side. Say one for the birds, please. Say one for the trees. Say one for my sister, my two brothers, and maybe me. And if my daddy had survived from his sadness deep inside, I guess he would have said one. My daddy don't live here anymore. Say one for the birds, please. Say one for the trees. Say one for your sister, your two brothers, and maybe me. And if you should arise with the sleepiness in your eyes, say one for daddy. 'Cause daddy, my daddy, don't live here.
Welcome back. You're with Mentuck on Plains FM. We've got Nolene Allen again with us from the Canterbury Men's Centre. Nolene, we were just about to ask you some more about the Men's Centre. Could you tell us a bit about the centre itself?
Well, first of all, I think probably particularly for you men out there listening, if you're wondering where our services are, we're actually on Marshland Road, just opposite the Palms. So if you're thinking you might want to make contact with us, you can do that by phoning our through our ordinary landline, which is 365 9000. You can email me, servicemanager@canmen.org.nz. Also, you can go to our website and you can connect with us through our website. So whatever is the best way of talking to us or communicating with us, please use them and please don't hesitate. We would invite you in for a free initial appointment so you can get a feel of the place, have a chat to myself or Roger and tell us what's happening in your life and we'll work out a plan for you going forward.
And who pays for it in the end?
Well, the initial appointment is always free. If you do, and then we sit down and we talk about what pathways forward. If, for instance, you were going to pick up services from our peer support team for the guys who've been sexually abused, that's all free. ACC funds that. And we also have an ACC counsellor in-house if that's something that's required down the track. And through that process, there's two men's groups that meet, one on a Monday and one on a Tuesday evening, and they're also no cost. When it comes to the counselling service, it depends on your particular situation. For those of you who are being supported by WINS, we've got all the paperwork there. We can support you along with your doctor signing the paperwork, and we can get that. We have a one point of contact within Work and Income to streamline that process so that you can access funding for your counselling that way. For those of you who are in employment, we have a scale of fees that we can chat you through. So dependent on your own particular personal situation, what it would cost for you to come to counselling. And we make sure that every man is able to be seen we don't want costs to be a barrier to somebody getting the care that they need at that particular time in their life.
And I think that's the key message, isn't it? Everybody gets taken care of. Turn up and work it out with them.
We'll work it out in that initial appointment. And if circumstances change, we can change that plan as well. One of the things I probably should highlight is that we have a very strong principle around confidentiality. So that at that first appointment that's set out for you, the conversations are confidential. We will create the framework of that confidentiality and how that will be. And we take notes at that first meeting. They go into our protected computer system and all those notes, everything's shredded. So confidentiality is something that we hold very strongly, and we have a very strong standard of confidentiality, not to the institution, but the confidentiality is to the room.
And once again, you're hearing some very powerful stories from men that they don't want getting out there at times. And obviously, if somebody's going to talking about murdering somebody, you have to say something, don't you?
That's part of...
Or killing themselves if they're trying to...
Yep, absolutely. If we, before we start our initial conversation, we take them through the framework of that confidentiality and we outline that were we concerned that they might harm themselves, we would have to talk to somebody. And I've never had anyone not agree that's appropriate. Mm. If we thought they were going to hurt somebody else, we have to talk to someone, and we explain that if we felt a child is at risk, we have a legal obligation. It's not just a policy of the organisation, it's the law that we have to do something if we believe a child is at risk. But other than that, we have a very, very tight framework of confidentiality.
Have you ever had any counselling yourself?
Yes. Yes, I think part of any good counsellor's journey is they actually have to have done the work on themselves.
So you're a counsellor yourself.
So yes, I am a counsellor, and so I have done work on myself, and we also go to supervision, which is a form of counselling.
Mm.
And so which provides that opportunity to look at ourselves a little bit more introspectively.
What do you think of men in counselling? Is it like, I guess a lot of people wonder, is that the right modality for men? Like I know some people talk about groups or going fishing together is the right way to get to the core of what's going on for a guy, you know, men's sheds or all these different solutions get put forward. Mm. So counselling, very Pākehā approach to the world too, isn't it?
It could be seen that way by some. I think it's part of a menu of what will help a bloke.
Yeah.
I mean, men are like women.
Surprising.
They are different, and different courses for different horses.
Okay.
And, for some blokes, going fishing with a good bunch of mates and talking over their issues is what they need, and go for it, guys. If you know what you need, a lot of men will go fishing with their guys and have a good time, but they don't open up to their most intimate troubles.
Okay.
Some of the guys tell me they don't talk to their mates because their mates don't want to know or they don't understand.
Okay.
Sometimes because men are quite competitive. They are often quite competitive within their own relationships, so they don't want their best mates to hear what's really going on in case they might get judged.
Okay.
Or be seen as less than.
Okay.
In fact, I think that's a strength, being able to say, I need some help in going and getting it. Sometimes they just want that confidentiality. They want to be able to put the issues in front of a total stranger, explore them, and for it to stay there.
Mm.
For them to take the growth and the learning that they've achieved, but they don't want to see that person again.
Mm, that's right.
They come in, they do the work.
Unpack it.
They do the mahi.
Yeah.
And they take the gifts that gives them and they take it into their lives.
Yeah.
But it's a personal, private thing, and that's okay.
I've heard it described as men don't go shopping, they go buying.
Mm.
You know, so when they're coming for personal care services or counseling or whatever, they're just getting in, they're getting it done and getting out the door. Is that what you see as well? Like the guys aren't lingering around, or is it a Is it more
again, it depends on the guy and it depends on his needs. If he's had a lack of nurturing in his lives, sometimes having somebody's attention for a whole hour and being able to talk about themselves is such a luxury, they don't always want to give it up quickly.
So,
that's their need, that's okay.
And that's maybe the first time they've had a chance to tell some of these stories, isn't it?
You know, and some of them are horrific. These guys that have grown up in care.
Yeah.
And grown up in the care institutions, and we get these regularly, who've been abused in care, who feel abandoned by their birth parents, have been perhaps mistreated by their birth parents, then the state takes responsibility for them, because I can't say the state took care of them. And then they have these other horrific experiences. They've had very few people who've given them unconditional attention and care.
So for many of the men, this is maybe the first time they've tested or had that experience.
It takes some, for some of them, it takes a long time to trust that, because they've had no experience like that that they can trust.
Yeah.
And so that relationship between these men and their counsellor is critical, that the counsellor cannot be seen to let them down, because sometimes they're the only constant in their lives.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds really rewarding, but also very critical work to be done, doesn't it?
It is critical work, because some of these men are hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not until they're further down the journey that they'll come and say to you, you know, that day when I came in, if you hadn't done X, Y, and Z, it was going to be curtains. This was my last try to be heard. But you did whatever you did, and I think that is amazing. Or when someone says something that you've done to support them has enabled them to have a light bulb moment.
And you've had maybe a year of collecting stories like this and hearing back, starting to hear back from the men. I guess I'm wondering how you must be going through a period of reflection at this point. You're an older woman already, and then you come along into this environment. You have a lot of rich experiences and knowledge of men and experiences of men and boys. And now here you are hearing the real guts of it all. Are your attitudes towards men changing, or have you got any reflections on from your previous? What you would have told yourself a year ago, what would you say to yourself as a warning a year ago? How's that as a question?
Having sort of worked as a counsellor before as well, and I've worked both as youth counsellor and worked with men and couples and women, I have heard some men's stories before. I probably haven't seen, and I've been really exposed to male vulnerability. In a way that I haven't ever before. And it's really interesting because I'm a mature woman, for some of those men I'm good enough mother.
Yeah.
Some of them I'm good enough grandmother. And it fascinates me how much they feel safe to tell. Because I present no threat, they don't have to impress me. I'm just there, hopefully been kind and caring. And that's where if they haven't had a good mothering experience, which a chunk of our men haven't had the good mothering, they may have had a good grandmothering experience.
Okay.
That they
again.
Yeah, and so often I hear from these men, my grandmother died and she was the only one that actually gave me any real love. And that's sad, because I hear that too often. It didn't come from their parents at all, because of drugs or whatever. But the grandmother stepped in as much as they were able. And so if they can see me as the grandmother or the mother. And that the mother had been the comforter, and then I can kind of, they can then open up and tell me what's really in their heart, and perhaps allow their wounded child to come out. Yeah. And sometimes I see these grown men, but you can see the child in their eyes, that little wounded boy that's still sitting in them.
And that's what you've been able to see this last year, whereas previously, I imagine you're seeing a couple together and so on, and you're seeing the man in his role as a partner, but this is more like the guy is there in front of you.
Yeah. And if I do my job right, because it's up to me creating the environment, I've got to create an environment where he feels safe enough. And it's really interesting because at the beginning of one of our sessions, we'll start with a question, what's brought you here?
Yeah.
And I'll get a headline. And it's often only as we get near the end, and I often invite people to, is there anything you want to say? And it might be that moment where the thing that he hadn't felt safe enough to say is told, because he's decided he does want to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And it can alter the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
There was an interesting study by a telephone helpline in the UK, and they found that they had much better response from men if they spent 5 or 10, maybe 15 minutes talking about football or bit of banter, and that gave a lot better responses from the men. Because it kind of eased them in and they created a kind of relationship of trust and that sort of thing, rather than going straight into the helpline script.
It's cold. In fact, we had a situation where we were trialling a helpline the other day because some of our clients had said, oh, there's no point going there.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing that helpline did was ask the client to do a survey.
I want something from you. Here you're calling me in a high place.
I'm suicidal, but please do a survey first.
That's right. We'll put you to a recorder there.
Do you prefer McDonald's or Burger King?
Oh, it's a sick world sometimes. I know,
we're kind of thinking, Yes.
Well, what's the future hold? If you could wave a magic wand, what would you do to improve men's, change society or change something?
The miracle question.
Miracle
question. Yeah. Oh, I'd start by every child growing up in an environment where they received unconditional love and security, where they could wake up every morning and know roughly what each day was going to bring, that they didn't have to worry about food or clothing or whether mum was going to be angry today or not, or whether dad was going to give them the bash or whatever. And I think if our children could grow up, we wouldn't have so much anxiety in our teenagers. We wouldn't have so many stressed adults. We wouldn't have so many people self-medicating with drugs and alcohol. I think also if our education systems could better understand neurodiversity, so that those are people who are on the spectrum, the number of men who are broken because of the way they were treated at school because they're dyslexic or had ADHD. And honestly, some of the stories I hear, these kids have been subjected to torture at school. Mm. And I'm obviously, you can tell by my tone, I'm feeling very strongly about this. Our education system needs to accept that we have these young people in our society and they have gifts that are usually highly intelligent. If you can work with them in the right way, what they can bring to our communities in terms of cutting-edge stuff is amazing. I mean, we all know what Steven Spielberg did, and he was dyslexic, and he's one of the role models I give to these guys that come in.
And when I think of the gendered aspect of it, the boys are more likely to experience ADHD, ADDs.
It's often eldest, firstborn male, which my son fits into that category.
Oh, okay.
So I kind of know what it's been like as a mum with a dyslexic son and trying to get good education for him. But the stories I hear from these men about how they were treated in school, and it's these sorts of treatment that our boys are getting that makes it harder for them to become good whole men in society. I think our education system's too focused on how to teach girls, and boys are supposed to be fit into that mold because most of the teachers are women, and they forget that boys need to run around. They're going to be a bit cheeky. Mm-hmm. It's part of being a boy.
I was actually looking at the NCEA results the other day, and I compared the outcomes for girls versus boys, mm-hmm. and then I looked at the different deciles, mm-hmm. and the difference between girls and boys, mm-hmm. is the same between a high decile and a mid decile, mm-hmm. School. So mm-hmm. so boys are effectively in a lower decile school than girls, and that's something that needs to be looked at, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, if you measure mm-hmm. and compare. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
So and maybe that's something we can take up in a future episode.
Yeah.
mm. Yeah, so I would like our young men to have better childhoods.
Yeah.
And that will give them the wisdoms. Then they won't have the attachment disorders.
Okay.
That mean they stay in these toxic relationships longer than they would.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, when I probe into their childhoods with them, this is where the low self-esteem, no one else will have me, mm-hmm. I'm scared of being alone. So they stay in these toxic relationships, mm-hmm. and they don't have the self-esteem to know that the criticism coming at their way isn't justified.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of, you know, so this is how we sort of, you know, and of course, so those are the things I'd really like to see. I'd also like to see our judiciary better.
Yeah.
I've had some experience with clients and the legal system in the last few months, and I've been pretty underwhelmed by what I've seen there. I don't see our clients being well defended. Only getting access to a lawyer half an hour before they're before a judge, even though they've had court-appointed lawyers well in advance of the court case, there being no communication, the ability to be able to put proper defence for them. And again, for the judiciary, only just recently I've learnt that the judges are beginning to get training in ADHD, post-traumatic stress, all of these things that are influencing many of our men who are in the system. And if they were only to get the right support as young men, most of them would not be recidivists.
Mm. That is a critical men's issue, the whole imprisonment, yep. and sentencing, and some people talk about gender bias. Mm. Really, we can get into that. Really hard. We'll have to find somebody to come in and chat to us about that as well.
So without going to any detail, there's some particular instances where I've been able to see the whole process, and this man's just had one injustice in his life after another.
Well, once again, you've been seeing some remarkable stories. Mm. Thank you. Thank you very much, Noreleen Allen, for coming along for the Canterbury Men's Centre. The phone number for that again is 3659000. I'm service manager at canman.org.nz. Canman, as in Canterbury Men.org.nz, is the website as well. So you can find Noreleen and learn more about the Men's Centre and its support services through there if you're a local fella. Thank you very much, Canterbury. This is us checking out. Donald Pettit,
Ian Ferguson,
and Noreleen Allen.
Thank you. I cannot-